Rick Stevens, financial advisor with FRS Financial Group. Securities and advisory services offered through LPL Financial, a registered investment advisor, member FINRA SIPC. The opinions voiced in this program are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision. For more detailed information regarding any of the topics discussed on today's show, please call 719-500-8700. This is Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial. Here's your host, Rick Stevens.
Welcome in to this edition of Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I am your host, Rick Stevens, and this is your show. Remember, if you've got questions you would like to have answered, if you've got a topic you'd like to hear a little bit more about, please feel free to give us a call at 719-500-8700. You can also send me an email, rstevens@frsfinancialgroup.com, or simply go to our website, frsfinancialgroup.com. Click on that contact tab up there in the top right corner. Send us that question. Send us that topic you'd like to hear a little bit more about, because we would love to hear from you. Well, folks, this week on Money Matters, we are in studio, as always, with Andrew Rogers. Andrew, it's a beautiful day outside.
It is.
Unfortunately,
almost like summer.
Almost. But unfortunately, if I've read the weather reports right, by the time we get to the air, it's not going to be such a nice day outside.
Yeah, it's kind of reversing that path. Normally, we have that midday or midweek dip. Now we're getting the weekend dips in.
Yes, yes. But the good news is I'm going to the Rockies game midweek and not in the weekend. So it's not going to be, freezing cold weather up at 20th and Blake.
True.
So folks, this week we are talking about risky business. And no, Andrew, I could see it in the face. You thought we were just going to do that Tom Cruise slide across the hallway with the Ray-Bans on. We're not talking that risky business.
Can I tell you a secret, though?
Absolutely.
That's the only scene from that movie I've even remotely seen, and it wasn't intentional. I don't think I've actually ever seen the full movie.
You know, the last time I saw that full movie was probably 30 years ago.
Yeah.
So that's actually about the only scene I remember from the movie.
All right.
That and him trying to find Mom's egg that I think, like, broke or something like that. Anyway, folks, we are talking all about the world of risk. We see it all the time now in markets. It's much more prevalent, Andrew, these days, and much more top of mind. But I want to start with this question. Are you a risk-on guy or a risk-off guy?
Probably risk-on.
So the whole jumping out of a perfectly good airplane, you're okay with that?
Yeah, I would do that.
Yeah, not me. Not me. I'm not a big fan of heights. In fact, when I've driven up to the top of Pikes Peak, I don't mind standing up there and surveying all that is around, but I don't like to look straight down.
Yeah.
The weird part about me, though, right? Hate heights, love roller coasters.
Really?
Yes. So I'll sit in the front car of the roller coaster because that's the only place you know when you've reached the top.
Yeah.
Because if you're sitting all the way in the back, you're going, okay, it looks like they've gone over, but I'm still going up.
Yeah.
So I don't like that too much here. But we're going to talk today, Andrew, a little bit about that world of risk and, believe it or not, how it applies in the investment world.
Yeah, because I know the kids would say, you've got to risk it to make a biscuit. And it's true when it comes to investment as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the typical concept here is that your risk and your return are going to work one and the same, but it's not actually always the case.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about that here in a little bit. But the idea, though, is that we've got to think about this world of risk, okay? And every investment out there, it doesn't matter whether it's a stock, a bond, a mutual fund, an exchange-traded fund, even things that you would consider conservative, like a CD or a money market account, even your savings and checking accounts, they all have some kind of risk.
Yeah, and that's because you're taking the money and putting it somewhere else. So really, the only risk way or the only way to avoid any risk at all is putting that money under your mattress, right?
Well, and even that has some sort of risk because the only way to avoid risk is to not have money.
Okay.
There's no risk in no money.
Well, look, we're all doing good then.
Yeah, very, very risk off these days, right? So when we start to look at risk, right, typically when we think of the concept of risk, we think about that investment side of things. We think of that ability to, you know, lose everything. But that's not actually the only kind of risk. And we're going to talk about some of those different types as we move along here. But some of those, you know, sort of basic things we'll set the stage with, if you will. You've got things like market risk, mm-hmm. right? That's the volatility, the ups and downs in any given market. You've got corporate decisions, which can lead to some business risk. If you've got some international investments, there are what you would call international or political risk, or even currency risk that are out there. And then if we just think about we're holding on to cash, we've also got inflation risk.
Yeah.
Because that stuff that's, you know, a dollar today, next week, next month, next year, it might cost $1.05 or $1.10. So if we held on to that dollar and didn't do anything with it, it now can't buy nearly as much as it used to. So lots of different types of risk out there. But the flip side of risk is typically the other R word we like to talk about, because nobody likes to talk about the recession R word, but the reward R word in there.
And, you know, depending on the risk, it could be the big reward or the small reward.
Exactly. Exactly. There could be any measure. And sometimes it's not what we are typically expecting. Sometimes it's way more. Sometimes it's way less than we would hope. And that level of risk, each different kind of an investment, and yes, I'm throwing things like CDs and money market accounts into that investment umbrella right now. Every kind of investment out there carries with it some sort of risk. And typically speaking, when we are looking at investments as a whole, we sort of give that general concept of the greater the risk involved, the greater for the potential reward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not typically where you're going to take your money, stick it in a coffee can, bury it in the backyard, and pull it out in a week and their money has doubled. Right? That doesn't typically happen.
It doesn't.
No, unless you find a leprechaun. Then maybe.
What if you use the right kind of fertilizer? I guess we'll talk to Ben in a couple weeks about
that. Yes, we'll talk to Ben about that in a couple weeks. I'll be sure to bring that one up. I think it more depends on which type of coffee can you've used rather than fertilizer, but that's just my guess. Just my guess on there. So one of the things that I do when I'm trying to sort of describe the relationship with risk and reward to clients is I say, think about it like this. Visualize a map of the United States.
Okay.
Now, there's the Continental 48, not to pick on Alaska and Hawaii, but they skew my map a little bit whenever I'm breaking it into quadrants.
Well, and you, if you watch any commercial, you know prices are always higher in Alaska and Hawaii anyway. So not a good, you know, financial discussion anyway.
Exactly. Exactly. So we break apart the map, right? We've got the map of the U.S., dead center is roughly Kansas City, right? If you were to just split the U.S. north, south, east, west, you've got that dividing line in the middle. That almost runs through Kansas City.
Yeah.
So we use that as the midpoint.
Mm-hmm.
When I'm talking midpoint with risk, that's usually where I'm talking about the risk associated with the S&P 500.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that as a market in the past. So then we can break things down. The further north we go, the higher the return. The further south we go, the lower the return.
Okay.
The further west we go is lower risk. The further east is higher risk. And it's going to start making sense in just a moment here. So we go to the far northeast corner of the U.S. That's Maine.
Yeah.
You know what they call folks from Maine, Andrew?
Canadian?
Close. Sometimes they refer to them as maniacs.
Okay.
Maine, on this list, right, on this quadrant, yeah, is high risk, high reward.
Okay.
And that's that sort of thing where I tell folks, especially if you're going way out in that far corner, you're kind of a maniac.
Yeah.
Which now starts to make sense, right? The types of investments that you're going to find that fall into that higher risk, higher return over time, typically those are going to be your small and mid-cap companies, mm-hmm, the individual stocks there. If you're talking about things like mutual funds, again, small and mid-cap growth funds, your sector funds, things like technology would also be in that higher risk category. Your individual stocks,
okay,
right? Picking those individual companies. Picking the penny stocks, also in that higher risk but potential for higher return category. And then I always get the question, where do things like options fall into this?
Sidebar.
Yes, sir.
What is an option?
So an option is you have bought basically a contract that gives you the, wait for it, option to buy or sell a particular security down the road at a particular price.
Okay.
So if you bought a sell option, you have thought, you know what, I think this particular item is going to go up in value, so I'm going to buy the option to sell it at a higher value later. Perhaps it's actually going to go down. I can buy and then sell it at, mm-hmm, that higher price. Sometimes you buy what are called calls or buy options, which is, you know what, I think the price is going to go way up in the future, but I'm going to pay for this option to be able to buy it at a lower price,
okay,
in the future. So there's risk involved in that, right? Future risk in there. I'd usually tell folks, options contracts don't fall into Maine. They're a little further northeast into like Nova Scotia.
Okay.
So now we're getting to Canada.
Getting a little newfie in there.
Yep, getting a little newfie in there. We also, because I get this, well, what about cryptocurrency? I said, well, if Maine is the top right corner, cryptocurrency is somewhere around Greenland,
yeah,
in terms of risk and potential for reward there. So big risk in that upper right-hand corner. Then we go to the southeast.
Okay.
What's down in the southeast part of our country, Andrew?
Florida.
Yes, sir.
Populated by Florida man.
Yes, populated by Florida man. I always love search Florida man and today's date or your birth date and see, yeah, what's going on, because that's always fun. Florida, southern tip of Florida, not all the way to the Keys.
Okay.
We're actually going to stay on the mainland here in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
And in particular, South Beach.
Okay.
Moving east, moving south. Moving east, we're still high risk. Moving south, though, we're low return.
Okay.
So high risk, low return, that's South Beach. Nothing good happens in South Beach.
Yeah.
I've probably been told that a time or two by my mother. Right, just like after midnight. Nothing good happens after midnight.
Yeah.
We want to stay out of South Beach. So if I've got high risk, high return, right, things like my cryptocurrency and my options and even those small companies, what falls into that high risk, low return category? Those are typically going to be most of your foreign or your international types of investments.
Okay.
Typically going to be more risk than our market as a whole, but also lower return. That's also where we see things like emerging market currency funds. Sometimes your real estate type investments are going to fall into that category as well. So that's the high risk, low return category. We're up against the first break in today's show.
We're going to continue this trip across the nation still ahead.
We are indeed, folks. Stick around. We are going to take you all the way around the country. We will be right back.
Does stock market volatility have you wondering which way is up? Do the talking heads and doomsayers have you wondering if this really is the end? If you want straight answers from an advisor who isn't just trying to sell you something, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment today. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Welcome back to Money Matters, presented by FRS Financial Group. I'm Andrew Rogers, along with Rick Stevens. We're talking about the concept of risk. And Rick, before that break, you were discussing how you can break down kind of a risk chart as far as reward and, you know, the risk involved based off the continental U.S. We just took our talents to South Beach, really looking at what a low reward, high risk investment would look like.
Yeah, you know, and actually we could throw the LeBron contract in there, right? Because the Miami Heat signing him to this massive long-term deal didn't exactly bring a lot of championships, but it cost them a lot of money.
Yeah.
So definitely high risk and low reward from that. Not that I'm a LeBron hater.
Unless you follow Rick on social media, you can see a lot of comments starting to pop up. But,
you know, there are a few. Most of it, though, is directed to, you know, the folks that are going, well, Mike, he was never any good without Scotty, sort of things.
Oh, really, no, without Dennis.
You got Scotty, you got Dennis, because obviously after Rodman quit beating up Scotty and started playing with him, they got even better.
Yeah.
So, well, folks, we are taking that trip around the country here. We've talked about the Northeast, high risk, high reward. We've talked about the Southeast, high risk, low reward. Andrew, we're going to relax it a little bit.
All right.
We're going to the Southwest.
Okay.
And in particular, we're going to San Diego.
Okay.
Now, what comes to mind when you think about San Diego?
Good weather, nothing really big happening, you know, kind of 75 degrees nonstop, just easy living.
Yep, just nice, easy living. It's not a big, fast pace in life anymore. You're just kind of hanging out. And the Southwest, right, that San Diego sort of concept here, is taking your money and putting it in that coffee can, digging that hole. Hopefully it's not going to get wet.
Yeah.
Hopefully the worms aren't going to come around and eat it. We're talking very low risk, but also very low reward. We've not crossed the border to Tijuana.
Yeah, because I was about to say, because Tijuana would be in that South Beach territory.
Yes, yes, yes. So this is the low-key San Diego side of things. And this quadrant, right, if you think, you know, Kansas City straight west and then everything south in the U.S., that's oftentimes where your bonds will live. And yes, you can get some bonds that have a little bit higher risk than the market overall. Again, those are sort of your emerging markets, international sort of things. But typically, if you get any kind of bond fund within the U.S., it's typically going to live in that southwest corner. It's going to pull back some of the risk in your portfolio. It's also going to lower some of that return.
Yeah, so even, you know, those bond markets you mentioned, you know, some of those international markets, things like that, that's really only going to bump you up to maybe Phoenix, something like that, where it's still pretty good weather year-round.
Exactly, a little Phoenix, maybe even getting into the southern part of Colorado as well, down there in that Trinidad sort of world. We then get to take the trip.
Okay.
The trip to the Pacific Northwest.
Okay.
Top left-hand side of that risk-reward matrix, we get Seattle, right?
Yeah.
Seattle is the Emerald City.
Yeah.
You know what else is the Emerald City, Andrew?
Oz.
Yes, you've got children. You know about Oz.
Yep.
You know what's the reality with Oz? Oz does not exist.
Yeah.
Oz, there's no such thing as an investment with no risk and high return.
Okay.
That does not exist. That is the only in my dreams somewhere over the rainbow sort of concept.
Or maybe those one-time, you know, moonshots years ago with the, you know, Starbucks, Amazon, Seattle's. I wish I had a time machine, go back, invest in those early, because that's never going to happen again.
Right. It's sort of the whole, you know, because I always see these things thrown out there. If you could go back to 1980, what would you tell yourself? And I go, well, I would be 6 years old, but I would say, buy Microsoft now.
Yeah.
You know, that would have been a good thing to do in 1980 at that point. But the idea here, Seattle by itself as an individual investment is not attainable.
Yeah.
However, when we build a portfolio, Seattle can still be the goal out of things in here. And again, We'll talk a little bit about that asset allocation a little further down the line, but the idea is to build this entire portfolio so that we can go a little bit further west, right? A little bit lower on the risk scale, and a little bit further north, a little bit higher on the return than the S&P. So maybe we can't get to Seattle via Kansas City, but we can sometimes build a portfolio that gets us maybe Cheyenne.
Yeah, maybe Cheyenne, maybe Salt Lake if we want to go a little crazy.
Yes, and every once in a while we might touch maybe a little bit further north into, say, Cody, Wyoming. Mm-hmm. We're probably not getting to Seattle, Spokane, Boise, definitely not getting into that Montana side of the world. Because that's much, much further gain than in the market with a little bit less risk. And again, there's typically that risk-reward relationship where you've got to take on risk to get that higher return.
Absolutely. And, we're going to talk more about that kind of asset allocation, but that's kind of a good analogy as well, using this regional basis and breaking down the map with your working career, obviously trying to invest for retirement. You can spend your working years living through some of the less, perfect climates somewhere in, say, a Cheyenne, Cody, even Salt Lake, where you have to deal with more winter, some of those issues,
yes,
to be able to retire Sunset Beach down in San Diego.
Yeah, and even going through the upper Midwest, right? The Chicago, the Detroit, into Pittsburgh sort of world. You're dealing with all of that harsh winter, heavy snow that I don't like anymore. I don't know if I've gotten soft or if I've just gotten used to not having to go see the chiropractor after I shovel 3 inches of snow out of my driveway.
It could be another three-letter word that we won't talk about.
Well, that's true. That's very true.
Yeah.
Although some people would tell me that, I'm just a Cub fan, so what do I deserve anyway?
True.
With all of that. But the idea here is that, yes, we're going to spend those hard times, right, getting through that difficult winter so that, yes, at some point we can end up in San Diego or in Phoenix where it's nice, it's warm, it's relaxing, and we don't have to worry nearly as much when we get to those retirement years.
Really?
The biggest way to be able to do this, though, is we've got to manage that risk. We've got to manage it properly, right? Because we can't, again, eliminate risk entirely. But there are two basic strategies we can use, asset allocation and diversification, to actually manage both what we call systemic or systematic risk, as well as those different non-systemic or non-systematic risks. So the concept here, have you ever heard about hedging your bets?
Yeah.
That's what we're doing when we're building a diverse asset allocated portfolio. In any given year, I can tell you that one of two things is going to happen in the market. It's either going to be up or it's going to be down.
Yeah.
Very rarely does nothing happen in the market. It's either going to be up or it's going to be down. And as we break those into sectors, some sectors may be up while other sectors are going to be down. Sometimes everything is down, like we saw in 2022, where unless you had commodities, everything across the board was down, but it's a how far down is it going?
And then you still have those commodities to offset that as well. And even taking it back to that map example, that's where we start getting back up towards that northeast, that kind of rust belt where we see, areas in, let's say, northeast Ohio, Pittsburgh, things like that were very, very reliant on a single industry. And now we've seen what happens when the plant shuts down, the company moves out of town.
Yep. And the bottom line is, it doesn't matter what sector we're talking about, right? Everything does have some sort of risk. But if we dump everything into just that single sector, we actually increase our risk. Whereas spreading it out over all the sectors, we might not get that big, giant, oh my goodness, look, I was up 55% this year. But we're typically also not going to say, oh, you know what? All my money was in Enron.
Yeah.
Because I thought power and utility was the place to be, and now I have nothing.
Yeah, and that gets you closer back towards, you know, the middle Midwest, maybe, you know, the Kansas City, maybe Omaha, one of those cities where really nothing really happens there, but that's good and bad.
Exactly, exactly. You know, I always love the analogy, right, of using the map of the U.S. as risk, and you get to that Kansas City, go a little further north to Omaha, we get the Oracle of Omaha mm-hmm. with Warren Buffett. He always likes to talk about his investment philosophy falling on that value side. And that value side really is trying to get the largest reward for the least amount of risk.
Yeah, and even go further north, you get into a little bit more risky territory. You get to Minneapolis, you got the Mall of America. Really, if you just try to jump into everything, that's going to be that much more risk.
Exactly, exactly. And that's really one of those things when we're starting to break down the different types of risk out there, right? There's this idea of market risk, right? That is the volatility. Those are the ups and downs, trading in and out day after day after day. Market risk. Okay. That's ultimately we think about risk from the bad side. Mm-hmm. So market risk is the risk that your investment is going to decline.
Yeah.
We end up in the Mall of America. There's a big risk involved with all of a sudden nobody's going to malls anymore. Why do we have an entire amusement park inside of the mall,
mm-hmm.
right? Big risk involved in there. We also have, and we saw this kind of play out last year as well in 22, interest rate risk is also a factor in the market as a whole.
You know, we even saw it this year with that interest rate risk where you have, you know, some bank managers, you know, not to name names, but Silicon Valley, still making those long-term investments when we see the yield invert and those long-term
yes.
risks are not exactly the best play anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. That whole idea, right? Theoretically, when rates go up, the value of bonds goes down. But when the value of bonds goes down, theoretically, that's the other side of that seesaw, and the value of stocks should go up. But when we have, like we had last year, not only the interest rates, but we also saw the high inflationary environment. Now the value of stocks is coming down. And rather than a seesaw, it's more like an elevator.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not exactly what we're hoping for. We also have, from that market risk side, especially if you're in that foreign market side of things, a currency risk, right? That possibility that the currency of a particular country, well, that country might not be able to, say, pay its bills like Greece.
Mm-hmm.
And when you have a country that all of a sudden has to basically, for lack of a better term, go through bankruptcy, the currency of that country is no longer useful to anybody. In fact, I've got a buddy who is a multi-millionaire in Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
Because a loaf of bread is about $10 million these days.
Yeah, and then you get into some of those other foreign currencies, even riskier, bordering on scams, where you kind of have people preying on saying, oh, this is going to happen. They're going to take a couple zeros off this. Your investment's going to go through the roof, right like that, but we know what's going
to
happen.
You don't happen to be talking about the dinar, do you?
You know, I've got it on good source 90 more days.
But 90 days from when? That's always the question.
Every 90 days. don't ask too many questions, just 90 days.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. Folks, we are up against that next break in the show. When we come back, we will continue talking about risk right here on Money Matters. Stick around. We will be right back.
Money affects each of us in different ways. Sometimes it's a source of stress and fear. Sometimes it's a source of comfort and security. Whatever your perspective, it's always good to get a second set of eyes on your finances to help serve as a guide. If you are looking for that guidance, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary appointment. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA SIPC.
Folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial. Rick Stevens in studio with Andrew Rogers. We're talking some risky business today.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about, well, Andrew, losing my money.
Yeah.
And it's one of those things that a lot of folks worry about.
Yeah, not a conversation you want to have with a financial advisor.
Actually, it is. It is. Right. Now, because the key to that is, and I've had a lot of these conversations actually coming out of 2022 with, oh my goodness, I lost so much money. And the answer is, on paper.
Yeah.
Right? We still own the same number of shares. The shares have just dropped in value. We can't look at 1 year and think I lost money. The only way, and Dave Ramsey talks about it all the time, the only way to lose money is to jump off that roller coaster. So to fully cash out, yes, you lost money. But hopefully, your advisor said, let's not cash out mm-hmm. in a bad year. In fact, it's usually a good time to put a little more in because things are on sale.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I like getting things on sale.
Yeah.
So anyway, off the sales, back to the risk world, cool. right? One of those other risks that is out there is this business risk. And we don't always think about the business risk side of companies when we're doing the investing, mostly because it seems so far away and foreign to us. But really, the business risk is this business A, going to continue to be there?
Mm-hmm.
And B, is it going to continue growing at the rate that maybe it has been in the past? So what are those things that could create that business risk? We don't typically think of things like fire or flood or a natural disaster, but those are all definitely things we could see happening. The biggest pieces, though, are things that we see, I guess I'll say mildly reported mm-hmm. from a national scale. You know, Walmart has actually closed about a dozen stores recently, most of which because they've seen an increase in retail theft.
Yeah.
Now, I've got some theories on that, not the least of which would be, hey, put a few more cashiers up there and you don't have people checking themselves out, missing different things because, hey, I've not been trained on that scanner, have you?
No, or maybe, you know, take a look at some of the constituent cities and what they're putting around the Walmarts.
Yes.
Things like that, because, you know, Walmart's pulled out of a couple cities entirely due to yes. the laws in the crime statutes.
Yep, exactly. So that's one of those business risk pieces that most folks who would have invested in Walmart never would have thought about.
Yeah.
Never would have thought about. We also have that risk, and we saw that coming through 2022, of economic downturn.
Mm-hmm.
That's another one of those business risks where it's not like it was in 7, 8, 9. It's not like it was in 2000, 2001, 2002 with all the dot-coms blowing up. But there are more and more small companies and even going all the way back to early 2020 and all these shutdowns with COVID where those were business risks that some companies didn't make it back from.
Mm-hmm.
So big issues there. One of the other risks that we look at, and this one actually happens more often than not in that bond world or even in like the CD world where you have to hold it for a certain length of time, is the liquidity risk.
Yeah.
How can I turn my investment into money? Can I get cash out of it? And that's actually one of those things oftentimes when I talk to folks about real estate and owning their home. Is yes, you've got an asset, but it's an illiquid asset. Unless you are actually renting out another property and actually cash flowing that way, owning your home is actually a fairly illiquid asset because yeah. you've got to actually go borrow against it to get the money out of it. And again, from that Dave Ramsey sort of perspective, not exactly what we want to do to ease our cash flow. We don't want to be house poor, yeah. as it gets put sometimes. So there's that liquidity risk. Can I get the cash back out of this investment? Then we've got concentration risk. And I'm not talking about the ADHD
okay.
sort of concentration. Have you ever heard the phrase, don't put your eggs in one basket?
Yes.
Well, concentration risk is when you've put the eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
You have decided, I'm all in on and fill in the blank. I'm all in on crypto. I'm all in on technology. I'm all in on healthcare. And that's the only thing I invest in. Well, when you invest in one sector controls your investments.
Yeah, that goes back to that conversation we had when it comes to the diversification angle and even the old analogy with the different cities. You know, look, Detroit, very, very highly invested in the auto industry. That industry took a hit. The city ended up in bankruptcy.
And now, for $8, you can own half of Detroit. Of course, you got to pay the back taxes, which are a little bit more than those $8.
Yeah, just a scotch more.
So you've got that concentration risk. We've also got credit risk, right? The risk that whatever the entity is, whether it's a business, whether it's the federal government, whether it's a state government, a municipality, if you have purchased a bond, there is the credit risk that they may not actually be able to pay that bond back.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you this because we seem to have this every couple years, every couple cycles, going through it right now as far as will Congress raise the debt limit? What does that do as far as maybe investing in one of those, you know, U.S. bonds, things like that, which used to be kind of that gold standard as far as a stable investment?
Well, if you think about it like this, think about it from that consumer side.
Mm-hmm.
If I need to continually go into more and more and more debt, that lowers my credit score. When I get a lower credit score as a consumer, I become a bigger risk, so I have to pay a higher interest rate.
Yeah.
So as the federal government goes into more and more debt, continues to raise that ceiling, the federal government has to borrow more money. More debt equals lower credit score, mm-hmm. equals a higher credit risk and a higher interest rate. So, yes, you might be getting more interest on whatever the bonds are, especially on the treasuries, but now there's a bigger risk that there could be some sort of default.
Yeah.
So that's part of the risk that comes with that raised reward in there. There's also what we would call a reinvestment risk. And part of that is the sort of that concept of we're going to reinvest part of our principal or our income at a lower rate. That's one of the risks that wiped out Silicon Valley Bank.
Yeah.
Because they were taking money in, but investing it at a much smaller rate with those 30-year treasuries. So they were reinvesting dollars at a lower rate than they had to pay out. Kind of difficult to make that math work out in your favor.
Absolutely. And as a consumer, say you're invested in this, is there a way to easily kind of tell if some of these things are coming down besides maybe getting on some kind of quarterly earnings call and almost having it sound like, you know, the parents or the teacher and the peanuts and not really understanding what they're saying?
Well, the easiest way is to go talk to an advisor.
Okay.
Because I have to be on those calls. I have to hear all of the wah, 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 and then I get to filter through it, figure out, interpret what it really means, and then apply it for folks.
So you're kind of that wah, 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 wah to English dictionary.
Yes, yes. That's a good way to put it. I got to put that in Google Translate somehow.
Yeah.
So, yes, I will be the translator for folks that have those questions on there because, yeah, it's a crazy thing, and especially right now we're actually smack dab in the middle of earnings season, if you will, plus, you know, beginning of baseball season. But that's beside the point. But in earnings season, I probably sit on 2 to 3 calls a day for 3 or 4 weeks just taking in and digesting all of these different data points and pieces of information. But I'm also an analytics geek. So I like to intake all of that and then go, okay, so we actually need to throw this guy a curveball down and away.
Okay.
So I can translate it from the big analytics speak to the how are we going to act on that.
And for those keeping track at home, that is our third baseball reference for the show today. we're pacing pretty high.
Yes, we are. It's the beginning of the season. We should be able to. We also have to deal here, and we've seen this, especially in 2022, inflation risk,
mm-hmm.
right? Inflation risk is that risk that your dollar in the future is not going to be worth as much because it didn't grow enough mm-hmm. to outpace inflation. Beginning of last year, a lot of banks, your savings account, even your CDs, were paying better than usual. They were paying 1% and sometimes even 1.5% interest, but the inflation rate was closer to 8%.
Yeah.
So you're actually, as I oftentimes tell folks, you were losing money safely guaranteed by FDIC. Guaranteed. You're okay. You can have that money back, but it's just not going to be worth nearly as much.
Yeah.
That's our inflation risk, right? So especially as we get folks into those retirement years, when we don't have that ability or that desire oftentimes to go through, to work more, to make more. We're just living off the growth of the assets. Inflation risk is very, very real. We want to grow to beat inflation. Now, we don't want to go crazy. We don't want to go all the way up to Portland, Maine kind of crazy. We may actually want to settle ourselves somewhere around, I don't know, maybe Santa Fe.
Yeah.
Right? So not at the same level as the market. We've pulled it back, but we're not all the way down into San Diego.
Yeah.
So pulling that back. We've also got what we would call horizon risk. And that doesn't mean trying to look out across the horizon to see, you know, what enemy is coming in. What that really looks at is the amount of time you have. So, for example, starting in 2020, we started to see mass layoffs because of COVID. That accelerated some folks' time horizon on the retirement side. They may have been looking for 2025, but they got retired in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So that shortened horizon is one of those risks that we have to kind of work through and think about. What if, right? What if it comes to this? What am I going to do? Am I going to go try to find a job? Do I have enough in terms of assets to make this work even a couple of years ahead of my intended schedule? Have I planned for, well, the worst case scenario?
Yeah.
We also have the longevity risk.
Kind of similar to the horizon risk.
Yes. This is actually kind of that flip side of it. And this is what almost every retiree starts to think about. What happens if I outlive my money? That's a big question.
Yeah.
Because thanks to science, we're living longer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's costing more to live longer because especially when we get into those long-term care type facilities, even in the Colorado Springs area, in a semi-private room, you could be looking at $6,000, $7,000, or $8,000 a month in expenses.
Is semi-private industry speak for you're going to have a roommate again?
Yes. Yes, it is.
Okay.
Typically speaking, they won't send you the roommate until they're full of all individual rooms. Then they'll drop the other one in there for you. But if both you and your spouse need to be in assisted living, that could be your roommate. It would be okay.
Okay.
Of course, it's also okay to request that it not be at that point in time.
Well,
so,
in that case, you're still paying double the price for everything.
True. Very true. Very true. The last risk before we jump into the final break here is that forward investment risk. And we talked a little bit about this earlier. It's that risk that, hey, I'm invested into this international company, this international currency, and there could be something geopolitical that comes up that wipes that out.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that's we no longer have a favored nation status with somebody that we might be trading with. There could be embargoes. There could be this little thing called a war.
Yeah.
That's happened recently.
Once or twice.
So lots of different types of those risk out there. Folks, we are up against that final break in today's show. When we come back, we're going to talk about mitigating this risk. So stick around. We'll be right back.
Are you worried about what's been going on in the markets and how it has affected your portfolio? Maybe you need a financial checkup. If you have questions about the health of your financial future, call FRS Financial Group at 719-500-8700 to schedule your complimentary checkup. And remember to tune into Money Matters presented by FRS Financial Group here on KRDO, Saturday mornings at 9 and Sunday at noon. Products and services offered through LPL Financial, member FINRA, SIPC.
Folks, thanks for sticking with us through that break. Rick Stevens in studio with Andrew Rogers right here on Money Matters presented by FRS Financial. We've been talking about risk, Andrew, but we're at the good part.
Okay.
We're going to talk about mitigating that risk.
All right.
Because risk, it's nice on the reward side. But I don't know about you, but I know my wife hates risk.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't like to think about the downside of risk. And my colleagues and I have talked about this more than once. In an environment that we just came out of where we had 10 years of growth in the market, everybody has a growth or higher risk tolerance. But then you get to 2022.
Mm-hmm.
And that risk tolerance changes.
Yeah.
Everybody's all about the growth until they hit the downside of that risk measure.
Everyone loves riding the roller coaster, the ups and downs, but eventually you want to have that kind of smooth, easy, soft landing.
Yep, exactly. And there are really two things that we look at when we are talking about this idea of mitigating or managing the risk. Number one is this thing called asset allocation.
Okay.
And when it comes to investing, asset allocation is not just not putting your eggs in one basket, but it's also about how many eggs are in how many different baskets.
Yeah.
So if I've got a dozen eggs, I might be putting four in one and two in another and one in three or four, and I'm spreading them out not exactly evenly, but I'm putting them in multiple baskets and not, you know, dividing. I'm putting three here, three here, three here, three here. But it might be, you know what, I'm a little bit more risk on at this point. So I'm going to put out of my dozen maybe six or seven in a higher risk basket, but I'm still going to keep maybe two or three in a lower risk and maybe one in each of the mid-level risk baskets. So that's kind of that way to think about this idea of asset allocation. And we talked about it a little while ago, right? Having all the different sectors out there, and it's not often that everything is down. And sometimes even when everything is down, even cash will be up for the year.
Mm-hmm.
But not just owning a single focused sector, but owning all of the different types of categories. Owning the large growth and the large value. Owning the small and mid-sized companies. Owning something in government bonds as well as in corporate bonds. Right? Owning everything across the board, but in the right allocation.
You know, if only there was a way to maybe, say, invest in, you know, some of the maybe projected 500 best performing or most stable performing stocks.
Yeah, if only they had things like index funds that would mimic an index that goes across all those different sectors. If only.
If only.
Right? So oftentimes when we're talking about that asset allocation, you're going to have all kinds of different strategies.
Mm-hmm.
For us, when I'm managing portfolios, I have five basic strategies to deal with risk. They are an aggressive growth, right? At the high end, very aggressive, really looking, amongst other things, way down the line.
Okay.
Right? We're talking 10, 15, 20 years out sort of aggressive growth. The growth peels back a little bit of that risk.
Mm-hmm.
The aggressive growth might be a 100-0 split, meaning 100% of your investment is in the stock or the equity world. Typically, when I build that, we're using mutual funds. But when you pull the growth, it's more like an 80-20, about 80% into the equity world, into the stock world, 20% into the bond world.
Mm-hmm.
So we pull that risk back. We drop down one more notch to the conservative growth side. This is that 60-40 portfolio that a lot of places will talk about because that's the middle of the road. Whether you call it conservative growth, whether you call it a moderate growth portfolio, 60-40 is that traditional quote-unquote split when portfolio managers are talking about a balanced, well-diversified portfolio.
And when it comes to that consumer side, when do you know to maybe switch between the two?
The short version of that is yes. That's where actually sitting down with that advisor will help because it's actually going to be very dependent on that particular account.
Okay.
Because there are folks that, you know, I'm going to use this money for a down payment on a house within the next 3 years. We don't want to be very risk on with that. And they may have, you know, $80,000, $90,000, $100,000, but they just want it to grow a little bit, a little bit maybe more than the bank. So we're going to use a very risk off portfolio, very conservative income type, or even what I oftentimes will call a protected cash, meaning that we're not deploying this to the traditional market. We're going to use some money markets, maybe get an extra 0.5% or percent more than you would at your bank sort of thing. But very low risk in there, very much in that San Diego part of the world.
Yeah, but it's not like when you're talking like, say, in a retirement account, it's not, you know, happy birthday, you're 45 and a half, we're going to start talking 60-40 as far as the, you know, devil may care type.
Exactly, exactly. And I'll use my own father as the example here. All the way up until the year before he retired, he was still in an 80-20 growth portfolio.
Okay.
The year before we start protecting, 60-40, as he retires, and he's now been retired about 5 years, we're still in the 60-40. We don't need to protect terribly much because we still need that growth to happen. And the way that a 60-40 typically works is, let's say the S&P over its lifetime produces 12% per year, a 60-40 portfolio should produce about 60% of that growth. It's also going to take typically less than 60% of the loss.
Okay.
So if a typical year is 12% growth, in a 60-40, you should expect about 7% on there. So we're looking at that. What do we need it to do? Not just today, but kind of down the road. How much more do we need to protect? We also go even lower. We've got the income portfolio, which is a 40-60 split, 40% in equities, 60% in the bond world, down to that conservative growth, 20% in equities, and usually I build the pieces in there that have that higher dividend payout because those are typically lower risk equities, and about 80% into that bond or that fixed income world because we want a very smooth roller coaster. Little up, a little down, but we're going to ride that gentle wave.
Kind of the kiddie coaster idea.
Exactly, exactly. No loop-de-loops
in
that one whatsoever. So that's asset allocation. And there are all kinds of different places you can go. You can look up online, hey, what's my asset allocation for this age? But generally, we want to look at that on an account-by-account basis. For me, I'm 48. I'll be 49 in August. I still have all of my retirement stuff in an aggressive portfolio because in my world, I look at that and go, I've still got about 15 years or so till I'm ready to retire because it'll be 15 years before my youngest is done with college. Then I can start to really think about it. It might be 20 years before I actually step out of the world of work and need to use my own actual invested assets. So until that point in time, I've got a lot of time on my hands to roll it up and down, up and down, up and down. And as I get closer to that maybe 5-year window, scale it back. As we get about a year out, scale it back even further.
Okay.
So, yeah, it's not a perfect Ronco set it and forget it sort of concept. We do want to adjust this over time. But time is one of those pieces, right? Do I want this protected? Do I just want to grow it a little bit for when I'm ready to use it in the next couple years, or do I have 5, 10, 15 years down the line?
Yeah, and what happens, say, you know, you think you have that 5, 10, 15 years, but it turns into 15, 20, 30, and we start talking back towards that longevity concern, that horizon as far as like, hey, I was planning on this, but it's going a lot better than I think.
So one of two things, right? We can either adjust your risk level on a particular account a little higher. We can go from that conservative growth to growth, that growth up to aggressive, or we can adjust it backwards, right? We can go, you know what? I thought I had 10 years. I've got two. Yeah. Well, let's go ahead and adjust that. I thought I had 10 years. I was aggressive. I've really only got two. Well, we can actually skip. We'll go back to conservative right now, and we can do that. We can make those changes. Usually happens within the next day, depending on, you know, how close to the cutoff time we got at the end of the trading day.
Yeah, and this also goes back to that diversification thing, because obviously you don't want all of your investments in, you know, one sector, one pot, but you also probably want multiple accounts so you can kind of control that if something happens or whatever, that you're not kind of risking everything in just one lump sum.
Absolutely, absolutely. So being able to have, whether that's a traditional and a Roth retirement account, it's also having those other investment accounts that we would oftentimes call a taxable account, which means we can get to that money at any point in time, but the capital gains on those are going to be taxed. Anything that it grows will be taxed over time. So we want those different buckets, if you will, to be able to pull money from at different times because we don't always know what's going on through there. Asset allocation, just by itself, is actually not enough to effectively manage and mitigate the risk, right? We can allocate every last bit of our assets into securities, but it could be in one asset class, mm-hmm. right? It could be everything into these large dividend-paying stocks, or it could be everything into short-term government bonds. We've got to have that diversification. So we can't just go all in one company. We can't just go all in one type of fund. I mean, we could have, you know, a large cap growth fund from company A, B, C, D, and E, but they're all large cap growth funds, and they're going to all have a very similar holding mix. Mm-hmm. We want to get it across the board again. So that's that diversification part, right? That's being able to take some of those lower risk assets, keep them as part of the portfolio so that I have not just stocks or not just equities and bonds or equities and fixed income, but I have different types of equities and fixed income pieces. And again, if you're rolling that asset allocation, it's going to depend, you know, how much am I keeping within the U.S. and within the big companies versus the small? How much am I putting in particular sectors? How much am I putting in international companies? But it's also how much am I putting in long-term bonds, short-term bonds, corporate bonds versus municipalities? So it's really building that picture with all the different colors in it rather than just saying I'm using four shades of blue, because that might be okay once in a while for a painting, but not always.
Yeah, no, you got to get out of the blue period and you got to really explore all the colors of the rainbow.
Exactly. Exactly. And then we also have that role that rebalancing plays.
Mm-hmm.
Because as we know, over time, different asset classes grow differently. And if you, you know, 15 years ago, you put your stuff in an 80-20 portfolio, 80% equity, 20% fixed income, and you never touched it.
Mm-hmm.
15 to 20 years later, you're probably running at about a 90-10 or a 95-5 because those equities grew faster than that fixed income.
Okay.
To remain in the right risk world, we've got to rebalance that.
And that's where a trusted professional comes in to kind of have their finger on that pulse.
Exactly. And it's also where, and we've talked about this before, the concept of how you make money in investing happens.
Mm-hmm.
And that's buy low,
sell high.
And sell high. When you rebalance, you are selling your winners and buying more of the ones that have the lower value.
Yeah.
You can set that up. You can automate that so that it takes the actual emotion out of doing it, right? We're going to rebalance every 6 months. I don't care what's up, what's down, what's sideways. So that rebalancing is a big piece of that mitigation of risk. Folks, that's all the time we've got for this week on Money Matters. If you've got questions about your portfolio, your risk, anything you heard on today's show, feel free to give me a call at 719-500-8700. We will be back again next week continuing to talk about your money because your money matters. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.